Masood's value to us, and they wanted him dead. The enemy wanted our Afghan allies leaderless just before their attack on the U.S. homeland. The enemy, however, vastly underestimated Masood's enduring lessons, his legacy, and our partnership. Predator. Despite our complaining about the U.S. government's lack of response to AQ, there was one important new initiative driven by policymakers' needs. The administration wanted verifiable confirmation of UBL's presence at a fixed location. Over the years, CTC had provided several accurate human accounts of UBL's whereabouts, providing sufficient justification for lethal action, or at least so we thought. The policymakers, however, doubted our human source network. They wanted more. They wanted U.S. eyes on the target. The NSC issued a memorandum in January 2000 directing the CIA to find a means to locate, identify, and document UBL. This intelligence would be designed to support a lethal military strike. A technical solution appeared to be the only way, because DOD refused to put boots on the ground. This would have required combat search and rescue, CSAR, that carried a logistics tail, which required diplomatic approval and operational support from neighboring countries. I argued that CTC sent our teams into Afghanistan without CSAR, and so could the military. This opinion ran into the military brick wall known as doctrine. I realized that doctrine and the status quo of a peacetime posture provided the military an easy alibi for any operation that required great risk. I then argued that we could establish a base inside Afghanistan in the Panjshir Valley as a platform to launch our own CIA operatives on deep reconnaissance missions in concert with our Afghan allies. This time it was the CIA's leaders who rejected the notion. They viewed such an operation as too dangerous and too expensive. We had to develop another way. In its directive, the NSC designated the CIA, specifically CTC, because intelligence would drive this mission. CTC understood the challenge. Moreover, it had the access, the skills, and the authority, now expanded with the memo. CTC had the only operational team dedicated full-time to disrupting AQ operations. In fact, it was the only operational entity in the entire U.S. government working exclusively on Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. This was Rich's shop. Rich and I had developed a good working relationship. He always complained about the lack of resources. I always demanded that he do more with what he had, a near impossible mission. Our mutual dedication to the CTC task and the increasing pressure pushed us closer together. He was tireless, honest, and smart, and getting smarter all the time as he made a strong team stronger. His subordinates responded well to his leadership, but he wanted more. He would encourage and recruit the hard-headed, iconoclastic, passionate, original thinkers whom others would often dismiss as too much trouble. They not only followed him, they challenged him to be better. They pushed him. They questioned him. They constructively, fearlessly voiced dissent if warranted. He did the same with me. That's a mark of superlative subordinates. They make their bosses better leaders. In the coming months, my admiration for Rich would reach new heights as he built from scratch a reconnaissance system that would revolutionize our intelligence collection and eventually transform warfare. To address the technical and interagency challenges posed by the NSC directive, Rich first turned to a uniquely capable young officer. Alec was a Pentagon intelligence specialist detailed to Rich's team. Alec had enlisted in the Army, earned a promotion to warrant officer, and served in Korea. Afterward, DIA hired him as an analyst to work terrorism targets. After the 1996 Khobar Towers bombing, the Pentagon's J-2 and J-3, the Joint Chiefs Intelligence and Operations Staff, respectively, formed a joint targeting cell. Alec worked in that cell. After the 1998 East Africa bombings, this DOD targeting cell reached out to CTC. DOD needed greater connectivity and finer intelligence granularity. DOD offered Alec as the link to CTC. He came just before Rich and I arrived in August 1999. The January 2000 memo demanded a solution in 9 months. With the memo in hand, Rich and Alec searched for an answer. They experimented with long-range fixed optics and other land-based sensors. They considered balloons, but experts told them that prevailing winds would carry them to China. Not good. Finally, they explored unmanned aerial vehicles, UAV, and agreed that this might work. A uniquely powerful constellation of determined officials supported and drove this initiative at the policy level. NSC's Richard Clark, whose office had drafted the memo, took a critical leadership role. The Associate Director of Central Intelligence for Collection, Charlie Allen, and the Pentagon's J-3, Admiral Scott Frey, were also essential to this effort. They combined forces with Clark to push a reluctant and even suspicious interagency bureaucracy. This included many in DOD, particularly an Air Force that loathed any airframe without a pilot. In the CIA, Director Tenet understood the need, but was unsure of the risk and the process. Pavitt frowned on the entire effort. Kofor and I, both techno-skeptics, nevertheless figured we should give it a shot. We had to do something. The Millennium Plot was a disaster thwarted. There would be other AQ attacks. Kofor allocated $5 million out of his budget for the UAV program. It was a big chunk of his discretionary spending. Internally, the search for the right UAV created problems with SAD's leadership. They had a UAV that was limited in performance, with no satellite control link. The chief of SAD was protective of his UAV program and refused to search for another bird. So Rich and Alec went to the Air Force and found the Predator. The airframe had performed in the Balkans, so the technology was proven. Rich and Alec flew to an Air Force base to inspect the bird. It was collecting dust in a hangar. The Predator is a simple machine, sort of like a big glider with two snowmobile engines powering a single propeller. The wingspan is 55 feet, the length 27 feet, and the payload capacity 450 pounds. It flies at a maximum altitude of 25,000 feet with a maximum airspeed of 138 miles per hour and a maximum endurance of 40 hours. All these capabilities matched our needs, especially the ability to loiter for hours at an altitude where detection was unlikely. Perhaps because of its simplicity, it was remarkably reliable and tough. While the platform itself was simple, the entire unmanned aerial system, UAS, was complex. The command-control link was via satellite, and issues of bandwidth access and capacity dominated early discussions and operations. While the footprint of the launch recovery teams on the ground was small, the logistics and security requirements were not. Deployment of the system would pose unique challenges to the status quo of international airspace, bilateral relationships, and fundamental issues of national sovereignty. With the eventual incorporation of Hellfire missiles on the platform, the system would call into question the very nature of war. Rich's team needed to integrate the UAV into the UAS, and then the UAS into an intricate all-source collection mission. For starters, we needed to know where to base the Predator. Then we needed to know where to deploy it. The optics afforded us a clear, close image from high altitudes, but the field of view was narrow. It was like looking at Earth through a soda straw. All-source intelligence would have to tell us where to deploy and how to guide the Predator. Rich and his staff worked tirelessly throughout 2000 to construct this collection system. They funneled all CIA HUMINT reporting on AQ leaders in Afghanistan to Rich's predator team, both from our unilateral sources and from liaison services. That process was straightforward, given that Rich was responsible for that CTC collection mission. He then pumped relevant SIGINT into the team, greatly facilitated by an NSA officer on loan to CTC. He prevailed upon the National Reconnaissance Office, NRO, for satellite imagery. CIA Associate Director Charles Allen used his great credibility and horsepower in the intelligence community to assist us any time we needed help. He understood the threat and was relentless in pushing our agenda. Rich's special UAV team built a command center with wide video screens positioned high on the walls, with banks of computer terminals in a long row in the middle of the room and against the walls. The place hummed with electrons and raw brain power. All source intelligence from all over the world poured into the terminals, and Rich's team began building the UAS.